This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here, live from the NVP studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. The 2018 Video Game Hall of Fame finalists are announced, and joining me to give his thoughts on the list is former Reviews and Previews editor of EGM Now, Ray Carcello. Thanks for joining me, Ray.
Thanks for having me on again, Mason.
So 2018 is here, and the Video Game Hall of Fame has their finalists out. Do you know who they are, or you want me to list them?
I know who they are. I'm a big fan of many of these games. So, I mean, we got Ms. Pac-Man, John Madden Football, the original from, oh God, 30 years ago now, Asteroids, Call of Duty, DDR, Final Fantasy VII, Half-Life, King's Quest, Metroid, Minecraft, Space War, and Tomb Raider. I believe that's all of them.
Yeah, I think you hit them all. For you, what do you think is one of them that's going to make it in? Because I think they have, like, what, six goes in at a time? I can't remember how it works.
Yeah, I think it's about six going at a time. Right now, there's 16 games currently in the Hall of Fame. Might be eight at a time. No matter how many go in at a time, each one of these games has an argument to be made as to why it's a Hall of Famer. And even if it doesn't get in this year, it should be able to get in at a later date. I mean, you've got your old arcade classics like Ms. Pac-Man and Asteroids that, you know, I mean, these are the very definition of classic quarter munchers that, like, this is what, you know, these were the kinds of games that arcades would spring up around, right? These were staples that every arcade needed to have back in the late 70s and early 80s and needed to, and really paved the way for what would become, you know, what would define that era of gaming, even though then we'd have to crash and then we would come back in the mid 80s. For me, I love John Madden Football. I love football in general. But I also love sports games, and I love this has been the defining sports game, sports video game, for almost 30 years now. I think putting somebody as iconic as John Madden on a game and using him to sell a video game had never really been done before, and never really been successful if it had, and that kind of redefined a lot of things. I mean, each of these, I could go down the list from Minecraft to Metroid. Call of Duty, obviously, since it's debuted in 2003, is the biggest game of the past 15 years, selling millions upon millions of units every year. What it did for the shooter genre and what it did for mature gaming in general, and really, like, really helped put it on the map. So yeah, I mean, it's tough to pick, but if I had to cast a single vote, I would probably pick. God, this is so tough. I would say Metroid. I'm gonna go Metroid.
Metroid, after just, you said so much wonderful things about John Madden Football, you went with Metroid?
No, Metroid, first female protagonist in video games, the replayability, the ability that kind of a world would had not been done on a home console yet, where you going from screen to screen and like being able to backtrack, you know, finding new weapons. It's called the Metroidvania genre now because, I mean, and it started with that. So, I mean, for me, that kicked off a whole new genre way back in the 86, so mid-80s, at a time where video games were just starting to really bounce back. I think Metroid is one of those, I know it kind of has a bit of a cult classic feel right now just because Nintendo doesn't put out as many Metroid games as they do Donkey Kong or Mario or Legend of Zelda, but from that list, I would say Metroid. I think Metroid deserves a vote because, I mean, again, they're all amazing games, and they all have a legit argument to be made as to why they belong in the Video Game Hall of Fame. But that's what I'm going to give Metroid just above John Madden. Maybe wait a couple more years when John Madden hits its official 30th anniversary, and you can have a nice big ceremony and bring that in 2020 or something.
I agree with you. They all have a good argument to be inducted. Mine was Final Fantasy VII, if anybody wanted to know. I'm a sucker for Japanese role-playing games. but the one on here that I'm a little bit like about is Dance Dance Revolution. And I played it. I loved it. But was it really that groundbreaking that it should be on the list?
Well, popularized the idea of using your body to input commands into a game. I mean, you could argue that it could be early predecessor maybe to what we would VR and the idea of truly immersing yourself and really moving around in a space in order to affect a video game. I mean, it's probably more the fact for DDR that it is a... I mean, I'm sure you've seen the YouTube videos of these people literally just their feet are flying everywhere on the pad as they're hitting high scores. And, both here in the States and, of course, in Japan, where it was hugely popularized in arcades over there. Again, I mean, it's another huge system. It's sold thousands of units, millions of units. So, I mean, even that has a bit of an argument. I would agree that it's, if I had to break this down into, like, tiers, that's probably, like, if we'll say three tiers, I'd put, like, Call of Duty, Madden, Metroid, Ms. Pac-Man up in the very top tier. I would probably put DDR in the very bottom tier. But I think that, too, that has an argument, and there are millions of fans out there who swear by this. I still have friends who at least once a month have to go to Dave & Buster's because they have to get their DDR fix in. So, I mean, it still has a presence here today in arcades, and it still has a presence for gamers now. And I think that, again, it's one of those games that has stood the test of time, and for some people, that's what they swear by. You and me may not swear by DDR, but for some people, it's a big, big deal, and I think it deserves at least a nod. I don't think it deserves to get in this year, but I can understand why it got a nod or a nom.
You know, I can get what you're saying, and I do agree. It really pushed the viewership of wanting to watch someone who really knew what they were doing with this game, because I do love watching people just go crazy with their legs, you know, all those old YouTube videos. And there are some new ones where they're playing both player one and two, and they're holding onto the back bar, and they're just like going woo, 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 woo with their legs. And
yes.
It's a lot of fun to watch. And that's actually where a long time ago, a lot of video game playage, that was it, because nobody could move their feet that fast.
It was unbelievable. It was absolutely unbelievable.
But I don't know. Being part of this list, I don't know. Tomb Raider was okay. But, I got a little excerpt. The 1996 game and its protagonist, Lara Croft, inspired a movie of the same name featuring Angelina Jolie. And I'm thinking to myself, is that its only claim of fame? Is Angelina Jolie? Is that why it's here? And that's where I'm like, I don't know. Tomb Raider, you know, there are different puzzle strategy games that could have been on the list other than this one.
I agree. I mean, as much as it pains me to say it, I think there are two reasons why Tomb Raider made this list, possibly cultivated by some lonely nerds in their basement. And I'm not going to say what those two reasons are. I'm going to let you speculate and try and I think you'll be able to figure out where I'm going with this without me having to say any more. Polygons. We'll say polygons. It was a very high polygon count at the time for the original Tomb Raider on PlayStation 1.
I can see what you're saying with there, and I guess that's where it got its putting points to get on the list at this point, right?
Yeah. Hey, 3D modeling back then was a big deal.
You know what, I'm just gonna say it, she had pyramid breasts, that was it. They weren't even normal looking. They were like little pyramids, but apparently people liked it enough that it spawned a movie.
At the time, if you were a guy in your early teens, that was mind-blowing. All I'm going to say on that.
You know, we've come a long way. You know, that's all I have to say.
We have come a very long way. Very long way in the social atmosphere and the game development. And we've come a very long way in 22 years.
You know, we're coming a long way. Do you remember in Dead and Alive where they touted that they had breast physics
in that game? Physics. Yeah.
The jiggle physics. And yes, we've come so long of a way that we now have jiggle physics. And actually, that's years old, too.
Oh, video games, one step forward, one step back sometimes.
But that's the fun part about it. And speaking about fun stuff, according to a job listing that's found by GameSpot, there is a posting for a lead developer for a Star Wars open world project. Do you think EA could even handle a project like this?
I think they could. They obviously have the resources. And I mean, obviously, Star Wars The Old Republic had done very well for a long time in terms of the MMO aspect. So I mean, they if this happened to have, you know, if this was an online open world, any sort of, you know, shared universe, they definitely have shown they can do that. It's going to be interesting to see what team they put on with this. I mean, this could be Visceral's project resurrected. This could be, you know, I don't know, they could have Motive working on it. They could have DICE or Respawn or anybody else coming over to work on this project. I mean, saying that they're working on an open world Star Wars game could mean so many things right now, especially if it has online features, because I know also the listing said they're looking for an online engineer. EA definitely has the resources. I think the question more is, do we want EA still working on Star Wars after how much they've screwed the pooch here so far and taken it over the past couple of years?
No, that was actually going to be my next point. You're absolutely right. I mean, Star Wars Battlefront 2, that was just a big mess, and a lot of fans were upset about it. You think if they do it wrong this time that they're not going to get Star Wars licensing again?
I think very much that Disney, who had to insert themselves into the microtransaction situation, which was something they did not want to do, and why they originally contracted EA to do this in the first place, so that they could just license their properties out and no longer have to worry about the day-to-day grind of dealing with video game development. If they mess up one more time, I definitely would not be surprised if Disney terminates the contract early and tries to go find someone else. I think EA needs to be very, very careful. And again, they mentioned online engineer, which could mean microtransactions.
Yep.
As much as it means a persistent world, they have to be very, very careful how they go forward with this. And I think that EA is aware of that. Disney is even more aware of that. And I think that we as gamers need to be aware of that and keep a real close eye on this one and see if this actually forms into something, and keep an eye on whether it's just exactly how EA plans to make money off of this in the long run.
Now, a game that's come out is Ni No Kuni 2, and I know you reviewed this one, right? What did you think of it?
I really enjoyed it. This was funny enough, I've played a lot of JRPGs over the years, but this was actually the first time I actually got to slap a score on one. That I actually took points on a review for it. And I played the original Ni No Kuni, really enjoyed that. But this one, it's kind of like the Tales series or Final Fantasy, where there's a couple of elements and a couple of through lines that go through the series as a whole, but this is not in any way a direct sequel to the first game. It's a whole new universe, brand new characters. The only thing that really carries over is the idea that there are two universes. There's our universe, and then there's the Ni No Kuni universe. And in for both universes, in many instances, you have like a duplicate, right? Like you have another a person that you're tied to in this alternate universe and vice versa. So that's the only real continuity thing. That's the only real idea that carries over from game 1 to game 2. But I tell you, it's night and day. They have done such a better job with game 2, Ni No Kuni 2, than the first one. The combat system is so much better this time around. It used to be the first game almost had like a Pokemon aspect where you were trying to capture monsters and have the monsters fight by your characters, and only certain characters could beat, certain monsters could beat certain other monsters, and it was very complex on top of your standard JRPG fare, and it didn't fare very well. It was something that a lot of people disliked. They got rid of that completely. It feels much more like a Tales game. It's still real-time combat. You know, you bump into an enemy, and you know, and you're mashing the X button or the triangle or whatever, because it's on it's PS4, PC. I played on PS4. You know, and you're attacking, and you're throwing magic, and you got three people per party, so you can you know, take control of a different character and have them cast magic and bounce around. And you know, it felt much smoother. It was a lot easier to get into than the first game's combat. The story was fantastic. I think it was a really, the games kind of have an innocent storybook feel, but they actually have some really interesting meta themes that they're kind of talking about how, you know, trying to be a good person and how important it is to go forward with life with an optimistic outlook on life. And so it's kind of like these really cute storybook tales that they've wrapped around these like really larger themes that I think that anybody can find and can relate to. The art style, Studio Ghibli did not work on this one. They worked on the first one, but the art style is still inspired by Studio Ghibli, so it's absolutely gorgeous. And I would say the only thing that was really interesting and that kind of irked me about it is that the whole idea is that you play as the advisor to a king that has been dethroned. There's been a coup, you save the king, and the idea is you're going to go build a brand new kingdom that all peoples of all colors, creeds, races can live under. Of course, being a fantasy world, some of these people happen to be cat people, or dog people, or lizard people, or mermaid people, as well as humans. And to build the kingdom, there's actually a really interesting real-time strategy mechanic where you have this meadow view of the world and you have to send some of your villagers off to collect supplies, and then you have to build certain buildings, and you can actually take your army to ward or actually to defend yourself from bandits who might invade your kingdom. And then when you go off on quests for the story, it goes back to a traditional JRPG aspect. So that was really interesting, but I think that, again, it might be a bit much and a bit too much of a change of pace that I think it might irk traditional JRPG fans. But it also has to be a lot to handle at times, but I personally found it enjoyable, at least when it came to just collecting resources. I found the real-time strategy battle mechanic to be very archaic and very difficult to control, but the actual idea of running the entire kingdom was actually a lot of fun. So, much like a JRPG, I just kind of went on and on and on there, but it was a lot of fun. I really, really enjoyed it. It was one of the best JRPGs I played in a while, and it's actually a little bit shorter than most. You can probably beat it in 50 to 60 hours, but if you love the first Ni No Kuni, I think the second one's even better. If you like JRPGs, if you like Bandai Namco JRPGs done in that style, like the Tales series, I think Ni No Kuni 2 is a must pick up.
50 to 60 hours, and that's short, just to let everybody know, that's short. You can easily do 100 hours on like Skyrim or something.
Yeah. Went JRPG mode there. I just kind of went on and on and on. I'm sorry. That probably, poor Mason, you probably felt like that was 50 hours. I'm sorry.
No. Actually, I was writing notes. Because in Ni No Kuni, the first one, I actually loved that combat system. I'm a sucker for the Pokemon kind of fight thing where it's a rock, paper, scissors. You know, rock will always beat out scissors, and paper beats rock, and scissors beats paper. I love that kind of style of combat because it makes you think like, hey, if I fight this person, should I bring these kind of little things with me, or should I bring something else with me? It makes it a little bit more time consuming because then you have to level them up, and I like level grinding. So that's my thing. And I'm a little bit sad that it doesn't have that in this game.
Yeah, well, they got a, you know, Bandai Namco and Level 5, who are the developers, got a lot of blowback for that system in the first game. A lot of people, unfortunately, you were in the minority, Mason, and most people did not enjoy it. I didn't mind it, but I know a lot of people who absolutely did not like it, and I think that they heard more people not liking it than people who did like it, and so they mixed it up. They did add a little wrinkle to it. There's these little magical creatures called Higgledies that you can find. They're very, very cute, and they kind of act like as a passive buff in your battles, where you can bring them into battle, and they'll randomly heal you, or they'll randomly throw like an attack at an enemy, depending on which ones you bring into battle. And you can level them up in your kingdom over time, but it's definitely they're much more passive than the Ni No Kuni 1 system. So there is a little bit of that, but far, far less pervasive than Ni No Kuni 1.
Okay, I guess I'll give it a shot. And I just have to put out there, I really do love level grinding. I could sit somewhere and just fish for hours in a game, maxing out that skill, and then do something else to max out that skill. That's like one of my guilty pleasures. Don't ask me why. It's just really mindless work I love to do.
You are a unique gamer, Mason.
I did that in World of Warcraft. I had a character that maxed out every type of farming, mining, gathering stuff, and I just love to do it. I don't know why. It's just it was fun to me to max stuff out. Anyways, there's another game called A Way Out. Have you had a chance to play that one yet?
Yes, I played it a little bit in the EGM offices. What's interesting about this game is that it has to be done completely co-op. You can only play either locally with a friend, or you have to have somebody on your friends list that's willing to play.
What?
Yes. So now before you get all angry, EA did do something interesting. Is that if one person buys the game, you can play with your friends for free. It's called the Friend Pass. And so the problem now, your friend can't take the game and then go play with somebody else. But like you can invite, like I could invite you to play. I could buy the game. It's only $30, by the way. It's a budget title. Could buy the game, download it to my PS4, invite you to play with me, Mason, and we can play online co-op together and go through the adventure. But when we stop, it's all fine. The problem is that now if you wanted to go and play the game with somebody else, you'd have to go buy the game yourself. you could only play for free with me because I gave you a friend pass through the game.
So let's say you gave me the pass, right? Let's say I can't play. Could you give that pass to somebody else?
I do believe that I can pass out as many passes. I think there might be a limit, but I can pass out several passes to different friends to play it with different people. But, you do run into the issue then that, because this, then this way only I could play. Like, if you should get into the game, then, you run into the issue then of having to go buy it yourself to possibly play with somebody, or you have to wait till I'm available to finish the story because you can only play it when I'm online.
See, you know what? I really hate game developers think that people have friends. I don't have friends. Yeah. Stop assuming I'm social. Just give me a game that I can play by myself. And occasionally, maybe even if somebody comes into the room and be like, hey, you want a turn? I'll give you the controller. That's probably the limit to how much I'm willing to share anyways. So I'm getting really sick of this. Destiny 2 did that to me. And I'm like, when are they going to just get like a random matchmaker? Like thing, I don't know. Just match me with anybody. I don't care.
And that's the thing too that I thought that I personally didn't like about this game, is that you can't play somebody. It has to be somebody on your friends list. You can't give the friend pass. You can't. There's no random matchmaking in this at all.
That kills a game for me. Like sometimes I don't want to. I just want to get through something really fast. And it's like, I don't want to wait for somebody for an hour or 30 minutes. And it's like, I'll just go into a random pickup group. Like why not do that? I mean, people do that all the time in real life. You just go to a basketball court, and you got a ball. There's a bunch of guys there, and you just start tossing it. Do you know them? Probably not, but it's still fun. You can do this with games, right? Like why can't we do that?
Yeah, well, that's the thing that really bothers me. And I get the idea is this is done by Joseph Farris. This is the guy who yelled F the Oscars at the Game Awards last year, and he did the game Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons, and he's very much in the idea of the co-op dynamic and people having to work together. And this game, it's the idea that you're playing two convicts who have to escape from prison to right a wrong, and it's an interesting idea. I mean, if you love Jailbreak and those kind of, or the idea of a Jailbreak movie or something, it's a great concept. But yeah, because of this co-op dynamic, you have to play with somebody else. You cannot play this game solo. It is only a two-player game.
Oh, man. Okay, jumping to another two-player game is Dragon Ball FighterZ. Now, they have a patch that came out, and they stated that they will not do any balance changes. Like, do you think that was wise?
I think that's a... No, I don't. I don't think it's wise at all to say that you're not going to continue to balance your game, especially after you release a patch that changes potential gameplay. Whenever you add something new to a fighting game, there's a chance that you're going to disrupt the balance. Now, I've actually been playing a lot of Dragon Ball FighterZ recently. I went 13-7 the other night in ranked matches. I'm very proud of myself. But anytime you add something new to this, I mean, and the game feels, like I said, I've been playing it recently, it feels very, very balanced. It does. It feels very, very well put together. But anytime you add something new to a fighting game, there's a chance you'll disrupt that balance. To just say, oh, this patch is perfect and that we're not going to touch it anymore, is a bit cocky and a bit foolhardy, I think, because you never know what somebody might find out there, especially when you've got a game that has sold as well as this one. We've got literally millions of people who are going to be playing this and probably looking for exploits and ways to get ahead, which happens with any kind of competitive game. So I think to say that they're not going to balance it anymore, I think, is a foolhardy statement. It's because especially if the community starts, if there is an exploit found and the community screams loud enough, they're going to have to go back and balance that game.
Yeah, egg on your face. I think this is almost like a challenge. Like, try to find something wrong, right?
Yeah, we talked about this with Street Fighter V. Like, I mean, it's the same thing. Like, you're just asking for trouble when you tell your community that everything's fine and the game's perfect now.
Now, speaking of Street Fighter, Capcom, do you think they could take like a page out of the playbook of Dragon Ball FighterZ and be like, maybe we should have made MVC Infinite more like this?
Well, I think that they'll definitely look at what everything that Dragon Ball FighterZ did right. And I think that, I really do legitimately feel that Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite was a cash grab. Like, to me, Dragon Ball FighterZ was a labor of love.
Yeah.
You know, Arc System Works, who is the developer, who are the guys who are behind Guilty Gear and Blaze Blue and, like, other fighters like that. This them working with Bandai Namco on this was a This was a labor of love, and you could tell this, that every second went into the game. They know the lore. Feels like you're playing Dragon Ball. I really feel that Capcom will look at this, and that if they do decide to do another Marvel vs. Capcom, that they understand that they're going to have that it has to have be something that they really sink some time into and really put some effort in, because they're not going to. I don't think they can get away again with putting out the effort they did with Infinite and letting in the community getting away with it. I mean, Infinite has been absolutely. I mean, not blacklisted, but it's been absolutely shunned by so much of the fighting game community, the big personalities in the fighting game community. But this is really a black eye for them, and I think that going forward, hopefully this is a wake-up call, because you're seeing how hugely popular Dragon Ball FighterZ is. Honestly, I think it's the best Dragon Ball fighting game that I've ever played. You know, going back all the way from, like, Budokai onward, I think I personally am loving Dragon Ball FighterZ. I think Capcom needs to understand that they have a very passionate fan base with using characters that people are very, very, very passionate about, and that if they're going to do this again, they need to do it right.
Absolutely. I can't even add anything to that. Thank you so much for saying it for me.
Happy to help.
Well, Ray, thanks so much for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can they find more information about you?
You can go to my Twitter and Instagram and all that fun stuff, at Ray Carcillo, RayCarsillo. I am no longer actually at EGM. My last couple of days were just a couple of days ago. So I still have stuff on that site. You can read my Ni No Kuni 2 review there at EGMnow.com. Pay attention to my Twitter. Pay attention to my Instagram. I'll be making some announcements about where I'm going and what I'm doing next, hopefully sooner rather than later.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapayne.com. That's MasonVeraPaine.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.